All right, so let's start with a little bit of review that I'm titling The Epistle So Far. And I got this idea from, I was flipping open the book of Romans today to begin this class, and I noticed the subheads didn't agree. I mean, I was looking at a New American Standard version of the Bible, which is my favorite version of the Bible, and I noticed that the subheads over the, you know what the subhead, what I mean by the subhead, it's these little titles that appear. I noticed that the titles seem to be contradicting what I was teaching you. And that reminded me that, and sometimes this is so obvious you don't think to say so, but people don't necessarily realize that what these subtitles are not in the Greek. You know, these are not part of the Bible. These are some guy's interpretation of what the next section is. It was the New International Version that first introduced these to biblical texts. That was the very first Bible to have these subtitles. I remember when it came out, and it was a big controversy. The New International Version itself was a controversy. Aside from just the controversial nature of offering a mainstream Bible that was not a literal translation, it was more of a, they called it a thought for thought versus a word for word translation. So it's half paraphrase, in other words. NIV is sort of a paraphrase. What was even more problematic for the people who objected to that version was these subtitles. Now, ironically, we've reached a point where every Bible that comes out has these throughout the text, that these little summary sections, because we find that as our minds are much better at organizing the information in smaller chunks, and it's easier to find your way back to a passage and this sort of thing. We can visually picture the page even so our brains work better with these subtitles. The problem is, of course, that the subtitles are artificially introduced into the text, and they are someone's interpretation of what that section of the text is. Does anyone have a New American Standard Version that they have? Okay, I'd like to hear the subtitles that you have in the New American Standard Version there for chapter 2, at the top of chapter 2.
Mine says the condemnation of the moralist.
The condemnation of the moralist. Okay, that's good.
God's righteous judgment.
God's righteous judgment.
Gentile pagan moralizers
are
no better than other pagans.
Oh, we've decided who he is. He's whether he's a Jew or a Gentile. Okay.
And I've got, this is a Jerusalem Bible. The Jews are not exempt from God's anger.
Yeah, okay. These are not bad. They're not bad interpretations. But they are interpretations. That's my point. So I thought, as long as we're doing this, I'll give you my subtitles. You know? Which is what we've got. Basically what I'm doing with each of these, as I'm presenting this text to you, with all of my insertions, it's way worse than subtitles. I'm actually sticking stuff into the text now in these brackets, right? And I learned that there's actually a term for this. It's not amplified, it's interpolated. So this is what I'm presenting to you as I'm giving you the English Standard Version of the text with all of my insertions in brackets and italicized. Those are interpolations into the text. So this is the interpolated, the Messianic interpolated version of the book of Romans. But so far, we started with the greetings, an epistle from Paul, Romans chapter 1:1-6. So basically saying, Paul, an apostle of Jesus Christ, so on and so forth. And then Romans 1:7, who's he sending it to? To the Romans, right? To the believers in Rome. Then the next section, he declares his longing to visit Rome. Oh, I've wanted to come for a long, long time. And then he explains why in the next section, because he desires to teach his gospel in Rome. And what is his gospel? Well, we're going to find out later on today. But he wants to go and present his version, his take on the gospel in Rome. And then he says, because after all, I'm obligated to both, not just to Jews, to proclaim this gospel, but also to all nations, to Gentiles. My gospel is for all nations. And then that statement about this gospel is from faith and for faith. All right, that was all the very introduction. Then he went into his diatribe against idolaters. I can call it godless idolaters. And he went into what we learned was a typical Jewish cliche, kind of attack on Gentiles from that period of time, because, well, you know, the Gentiles were all idolaters. And so he's going on, they're terrible, you know, they commit all these terrible sins, and he's invoking imagery from Genesis and from the fall of man and from these sexual sins and so forth. And he just winds this up to the point where he knows he's preaching to the choir with the people he's writing to. And so everybody's saying, yeah, 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 you tell him, Paul. Oh, yeah, you tell him. Right? We're all kind of like pounding. He's getting us all rallied up here. And then he turns the tables on us suddenly and abruptly, and he says, and who are you to judge? We're like, whoa, what's this about now? All of a sudden, it's not, and then he says, you who are, you know, casting judgment, you do the same things. And he starts to list off, you know, our versions of the sins. And then he goes from there to make these statements about how there will be justice in the final judgment, and God's going to judge not just Gentiles, which seems to be the prevailing attitude that he's rebuking here, that the judgment is for the Gentiles. And he says, also for the Jews, also for the Jewish people, there's going to be judgment. And then he goes on to talk about what is the standard of judgment. The standard of judgment is God's law. You're going to be judged by the standard of God's law. And he says, and you might think, well, Gentiles don't have God's law. He says, but they have God's law written in their hearts. And we can see this through this innate moral compass. Sometimes, he's directed by his conscience. His conscience is accusing him. His conscience is exonerating him. He's making rationalizations, self-justifications. Now he's feeling guilty. You know, this indicates that he has this innate moral compass within him. And if he pursues God, you know, by doing what's right and seeking the truth and righteousness and uprightness, he will be rewarded with eternal life. And if he turns to the lie, which is idolatry, and then there's condemnation, and this is for not just for Gentiles but for Jews as well. And so then he goes on to call out what I'm saying is the double standard of the proselyte movement. He says, but you, if you call yourself a Jew and you think of yourself as enlightened and you have everything through the Torah, you know, and who's he addressing now? He's, as I made the case last week, he's addressing Gentile believers who used to be Gentile but are so no longer because they've gone through a conversion to become Jewish, which was the standard, as we learned in the first week, of the gospel outside of Pauline congregations, and Rome is not a Pauline congregation. And so he says, if you feel like you have some sort of moral superiority now over the Gentiles, then I have some questions for you. Do you do this? Do you do that? Do you do this? Do you do that? Because if you commit any of these sins, then you're blaspheming God's name among the Gentiles. And after all, a Jew is not one merely outwardly, not merely legally, but a Jew is one inwardly, one who has the circumcision of the heart inwardly and who behaves in a moral manner. So therefore, if a Gentile comes along who's acting in an upright, godly way, and then you could say he's more of a, more of a Jew and inwardly than you are, because he's keeping the Torah. And no one's going to be exonerated just for being Jewish. They're going to be exonerated for keeping the Torah. That's the argument so far. All right? Any questions? Yes.
Okay, when I reread it today, this morning, and I wasn't here last week, so
right,
I'm
right.
Mm-hmm. Sorry if the question's already been asked, but what got Paul so worked up in the first place?
Oh.
After he had an introduction, it's like about the, you know, verse 8, chapter 1, verse 18, all of a sudden he starts talking about the wrath of God and the wicked and, you know,
yeah, well, what got him so worked up? Everybody's worked up. I mean, I've read this and reread this, and I really believe that Paul has a certain amount of sarcasm going on here. His The gist of what he's trying to establish is to establish the idea, and he hasn't gotten there yet, but to establish the idea that Gentiles can also inherit the kingdom. And this is not a popular idea among the Jewish believers. And so the Jewish believers to this point have been bringing Gentiles into the kingdom with conversion into Judaism, which is, you know, is the proselyte movement that I'm speaking of. So I don't think he is as worked up as he sounds. I think it's a fake worked up. He's like making it sound like he's really worked up. Like, oh, these people are just disgusting, these disgusting idolaters, makes me sick, I have to puke, you know. And then he pulls the rug out from under you and says, and you make me puke too.
Right. Something must have been going on in the Roman.
Yeah. Well, it's the Neronic period. Yeah, something's going on. It's the most godless and immoral period of Roman history at this point. It's lewd, rude, and crude. Worse than, I mean, we think we live in the most godless culture ever, right? Wrong. It's way worse than conventional moral standards here in America. So. Yes, I believe he's poking at the proselytes, they're believing proselytes. Understand? Yeah. These are they've become Jewish believers, and because they've become Jewish, they've occupied a position of cheap grace. What we could compare to cheap grace, which was is a popular theology that any group inculcates among itself, is like, we're the in crowd. Well, especially in Judaism, it's easy to fall into this idea of, well, I'm Jewish, therefore I'm good, and I don't have to worry about the particulars. And that's not a shot at Judaism or the Jewish people. That's just human nature, you know. The Baptists think the same way. The Catholics think the same way. You know, the Baptists say, well, I was baptized and I have my eternal security. The Catholic says, well, I went through the sacraments. I was, I was confirmed at the age of, you know, it's the same thing. In the case of Judaism in the first century, we have some terminology that plays into this. And I just want to run over this terminology with you. Help you a lot in reading Paul's epistles. So first of all, there's the term Jewish, which Paul uses to mean somebody who's legally a member of the nation of Israel. So legally an Israelite. Ordinarily that would be by birth. If your mom was legally Jewish, that's ordinarily what that means. You have to sit in the center because you're late. Yeah, right there. No, I left a little passageway here for you.
I think I will.
Here's a hand up.
Thank you.
At least you don't have to sit on the floor.
Right, that's next week. That's next week. All right. So that's the first term. Your mother was legally Jewish, and you were born to a legally Jewish mother, then you're legally Jewish, you're Jewish. All right? Paul says, I'm a Hebrew of Hebrews. You know, he falls into this category himself. Second term he uses a lot is circumcision. He'll say circumcision, thus circumcision, circumcision. Well, Paul says, I was circumcised on the eighth day, but that's not what he's referring to. In this case, when he uses circumcision, I mean, he could use it as a broad term for the Jewish people, but that's not really a way that Jews talk about Jews, you know. More often, Paul seems to be referencing a proselyte when he refers to the circumcision. It seems to be proselytes or proselytizers. It's a ideology that he's fighting against all the time, which is the idea that you need to become Jewish in order to inherit the kingdom. And we've covered all this in Galatians. All right, another term that we see is in the law. You'll never see it in your English Bible because it's always translated as under the law. But in Romans, we've already encountered the term under the law once, but it's actually in the law in the Greek. Outside of Romans, it's under the law. But in Romans, the term is in the law. I don't know why the difference. It means the same thing. In the law, under the law. He uses it the same way. In the law is softer, though. And it means someone who is Jewish or a proselyte, it doesn't matter which one. But he uses it in the, Paul uses it in the sense of, you know, somebody who, when he's speaking of Gentiles and being under the law, coming under the law, it's somebody who's becoming Jewish in the sense of, as he says in Galatians, don't you know that if you become circumcised, you're obligated to keep the whole Torah? Why? Well, because now you're under the law. Now you're Jewish. I mean, it's not a bad thing to be under the law. He says Christ was born under the law. You know, it's like, in other words, Christ was born Jewish. Right? Okay. But he is arguing against Gentiles assuming that status in Galatians and in Romans. Works of the law. Works of the law, this is maybe the most misunderstood Pauline term of all. And it's easy to misunderstand. Martin Abegg, who is a Dead Sea Scrolls scholar, wrote a paper on it based on a discovery called, I think the scroll was is titled Maaseh HaTorah, which is Works of the Law. Yeah?
Just a little footnote on Romans 2:12, in the law.
Yeah.
If it's got the Greek article with it, it's referring to a specific law. If it's without the article as it is here, it means a general condition. So he's not even specifically naming
the
Torah.
Okay.
It's a condition.
That's a good point. And I wanted to talk to you about that, actually.
I just noticed it.
As Paul uses the term the law, he isn't always. We think the Torah, five books, scroll. Paul uses the term much more broadly, very similar to the way we use the term Judaism, the law, very similar to the way we use the term being Jewish. It's a very broad terminology for him in Greek. And so I'll show you this as we go on, but I'm glad you brought that up. But that plays exactly into what I'm talking about with works of the law. You think of works of the law from a conventional perspective. What are the works of the law? Well, that's doing the commandments in order to earn your salvation. It's works. It's, you know, you have to be righteous in order to earn salvation. That's not it in Paul. That's not what Paul means at all. Paul specifically means by works of the law, he means circumcision, and all of the distinctive commandments which identify a person as Jewish, that, you know, like you get circumcised, immersed, keep kosher, keep the Sabbath, you know, keep the holy days. What else? Maybe put a mezuzah on your door, wear tefillin and wear tzitzit. You know, these would be the main things. These are the works of the law that identify a person as Jewish. You know, don't eat pigs. These are the works of the law. Because, and it's not even that Paul has any issue with these. Of course, he does the works of the law. But the point is that these are the distinctive signs of Jewish identity. And somebody who takes these on, then, under the auspices of the Jewish community, has become a convert. And this is the conversion ritual. This is becoming Jewish. All right. So then he'll use the term works, which is just short for works of the law. All right, all of this is explained in this book, see, Galatians, if you want, because we learned all this in Galatians. This is why we're able to study Romans now, because we already did our homework in Galatians. See the picture up here? See? They match. Yeah, because this is actually, to get this picture on the front of the front cover of Galatians, we had to buy it, you know, from, not from the original artist, but because this is a replica, right? And so we had to buy the rights from the artist who painted it, because it's originally a Rembrandt. So he's a guy who is a master at recreating Rembrandts. So we had to buy the rights from him, because this is supposed to be Paul. It's titled Paul in Chains. That's what Rembrandt titled it. And we had to, along with buying the rights, it gave us the right to also have a full-size, you know, a full-size piece. And that's how we got that full-size piece. Yeah. All right. Now we're ready to start reading. Unless someone has some questions about that terminology. My presentation of the terminology is not convincing to you. You have to actually, we would have to discuss it a lot further and look at it in context. So I realize that I just ran down. You just have to take my word for it. But I think as you see him starting to use these terms in Romans, you'll say, oh, that does make sense. Yes?
I don't want to address this necessarily today, but one of the things that bugs me is that